So this is a new thing we're doing, right?
Yeah.
We're going to call it what?
You came up with the name Joel's Joints.
I think it's a good name.
Or Joel's Jams, or something equally as strange.
I think Joel's Joints.
Well, catchy, it's very catchy.
Joel's Joints really good. Because there is so much music out there that, apart from just being great music, has also got a little story around it.
There's tons, you know that. You know, look how many records we've kind of sitting around in this room. Every record tells a story, and you know, whatever genre it is, you know, whether it's the producer or it's, there's a, I'm going to try and pick ones that have an interesting angle to them. Maybe it's slightly unconventional to that artist, or it's something that was never issued, or a, just something that's got a bit of a history behind it.
Yeah, okay.
And an interesting tale.
Tell me a little bit about your history, because I know you from sort of bumping into you in record shops, and of course the phenomenal work you've done with Quiet Village and little strange bits and bobs that you do. But tell me a little bit about your entrance in the music scene and stuff.
Well, I mean, I started out as a film editor after I left school.
Mm.
I mean, I was always obsessed with music. It was always music and film for me. And then I went to work as an editor in the film business. Didn't quite work out. I did it for about 8 years. And there basically was a lot of competition where everything changed and went digital. And my love was cutting film by hand. So I decided to kind of follow my heart and get involved in the music business, because I thought I might make slightly, you know, a bit more money. And there seemed to be more scope. You know, I went away travelling and...
Music bins?
Oh, business, sorry.
Okay.
Where was I? I'm getting all confused now.
Yeah.
Sorry, Joel. Right, where were we? I was an editor for about 8 years, always tinkered around with music. Never made it, though.
Okay.
Always would kind of, you know... be out digging from day one. Once I got into hip hop and I discovered those Ultimate Breaks and Biggs records.
Was that the entrance?
That was the catalyst for me.
Ah.
And I started going to charity shops. And
what record shops were you going to in London at the time to get your incredible Breaks and Beats?
Well, I mean, I lived in Kent,
but
I spent all my time, once I discovered Soho.
Mr. Bongo's?
That was slightly later on.
Right.
But when I first started going up to town to buy records, which would have been 85, 86, I was going to Tower, Virgin, Groove Records.
God, Tower.
And we all remember those glory days. If we would have, you know, known now what we know then.
But do you remember Tower Piccadilly Circus when it came in? Tower Piccadilly Circus, right? And they had all the Japanese cutouts, all the Blue Notes.
Unbelievable.
Vinyl everywhere. It was like the word just spread, go to Tower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't really know. Through my kind of, you know, love of hip-hop, I understood about, you know, I got into jazz fusion, so I knew about Grover Washington and Roy Ayers and people like that, but I hadn't kind of gone as far back as, you know, the Blue Notes and the Prestiges, so I missed out on all of that then, because I was about, you know, 13. Well, that really should have made a difference. I kicked myself. But, you know, I remember going up to the jazz section in Tower and, you know, buying two copies of Bob James 2 and things like that and thinking it was incredible. And it really was at that time, wasn't it? And going down to the soundtrack section and buying John Carpenter albums.
Soundtrack section.
Really hard to find.
God, yeah, that's
all
right.
All the early House 12s.
Yeah.
Which was all imported by, you know, and kind of sourced by Hugh Bowles, who then went on to kind of be manager of Mr. Bongo. And I went to school with him. So, you know, there's a connection everywhere, really.
So that was your sort of musical... education, record shops, picking up the music. But when did you actually start recording music?
Round about, not until about 2002. And I was friends for, you know, since the mid-90s with another school friend who was slightly older than me, Matt Edwards, who obviously records as Radio Slave and Records. And we went on to do the Quiet Village stuff. And
Where did you meet him?
Weirdly enough, I met Matt through mutual school friends. I was introduced to him. We were all going to Metalheads, and we met in the car going on the way up there. We all got a lift. And we discovered that we had a lot of similar musical tastes. He was into kind of, you know, old Chicago house, more obscure stuff. And we were both into kind of, you know, had the whole electro hip hop thing. And I kind of, at that particular time, I'd been sourcing loads of old library records, which we've had a big discussion about before on the show. And I kind of, you know, Matt being a bit of a beathead and really obsessed with samples, which I admittedly wasn't at the time, because Matt had been making music for quite a few years in South London, had a little label. And I started playing him these albums on KPM and Conroy, and it completely blew his mind. And, you know, we kind of used to hang out in his studio and kind of play records to each other, and he'd play me house records and whatnot, and I'd play him these library things. And it wasn't until literally 6 or 7 years later that we kind of decided, you know, he kind of got up to speed himself as an, you know, he was engineering his own music, which he wasn't at the time, and he was in a position, the technology had moved forward enough that he could kind of produce music himself. And he'd moved down to Brighton and made a bit of a, you know, career for himself as a producer and a DJ. And I, you know, I had some tunes lying around, and I said, let's muck around and try and do an edit. And then it turned into production, and then I was going down regularly for, you know, a few days at a time, you know, to his home, and we'd work in the studio, and it just clicked. But it wasn't something I ever thought I would do, because I never considered, you know, I was a bit of a, you know, I loved listening to, I was obsessed with sample-based music, but it wasn't something I ever thought I'd have the patience for or the interest in. And then it all changed. I've got electric current running through me.
Excellent, Joel Martin. So I tell you what we should do. We should play some tracks, and I think we should just sort of, well, anyway, what's this week's track? Let's play a track today and discuss it, because I can see it's a Hank Mobley song, and I just did a thing. It's really weird you putting a Hank Mobley track in here, because yesterday I was recording a show, and I do a little thing which is like, I call it build a blue note, and it's basically kind of creating a band of blue note artists to celebrate 70 years of the label this year, and I put Hank Mobley on there, and it was the third show I've done like that, the third mix, and it's the second time I've put a Hank Mobley song in there, and I was like, that's interesting that I'm keep coming back, keep pulling out the Hank Mobleys. And I'd read the book of his, I don't know if you read his the biography that came out last year, and he was not really respected, Hank Mobley, within the jazz world. Not really taken seriously, because he was too popular.
Yeah, that's the first thing I was going to say. It's not someone you hear people talking about Train and Rollins, but you never hear them talking about Mobley. He was kind of the second wave, really, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I don't think he I think it must. And I played a track yesterday off the what's the album called? I think the one which has got the Eiffel Tower in the background. Slightly later.
Oh, that's on the Liberty Blue Notes, right?
Yeah, early 70s. It's early 70s.
It'll come to me. I know exactly the one you mean.
Yeah, good record, actually. And it was just beyond the sort of No Room for Squares era. Anyway, you've reached for the Hank, and you've come up with East of Brooklyn.
East of Brooklyn.
What is that? Is it a Blue Note one?
Yeah, it's a Blue Note. It's from 1967.
Okay.
And it's a slightly different mix. It's from a Japanese-only CD.
Right.
It was never issued. It was never issued as an album. It came out in the mid-90s. And the album's called Poppin'. But it was basically made during the 1500 series. And
what's the 1500 series?
The 1500 series is the classic Blue Note. Is the first. It's not. I think the first series is the 900 series. Please, I hope I don't get this wrong. And the second series is as in the Art Blakey night in Birdland, etc., etc. Yeah. And the second wave is the 1500 series. So that's kind of all the classics.
Yeah, of course, I knew that. I'm just testing it.
No, you didn't.
No, I'm just.
You really?
No.
Sean P, where are you? Sean wouldn't have to refer to notes. Please don't say that. You don't keep that bit in. Six albums were released at the time in the same kind of period. Peckin' Time, the self-titled albums, etc., etc., etc. And it's kind of unusual because the front line includes a lot of people that didn't work with him, like Art Farmer on trumpet and Pepper Adams on baritone sax. And it's just a killer rhythm section again. You know, Sonny Clark on piano, Paul Chambers bass, and Philly Joe Jones on drums, of course, who played with him many times. And East of Brooklyn is kind of the best track on the album. It's just a wicked hard bop workout. And it's just something people don't ever kind of, you know, there some of those Japanese only blue notes, as you know, are fantastic, you know, and you know, the kind of Bobby Hutcherson and various ones, and they kind of don't really get much exposure. So I think it's time that we kind of, you know, hooked a little joint.
I think it's great that we're celebrating 70 years of Blue Note.
Makes sense, right?
Hank Mobley. So that's our track for this week. Next week, what you got for us?
Steve Winwood, obviously of Traffic, and something that you would never have thought would have come out of his kind of world is basically sounds like Atmosphere.
Don't say any more. See you next week.
See you, Charles.
Thank you.